There's some volunteers who are currently working at Timber Creek to try and stop the cane toad from reaching Western Australia.
Good luck.
Yeah. Do you think they might have some success?
I don't know. I just live with them. They're just there. Good luck to them, but I don't know how they'll go.
Would you spend time
everywhere
trying to stop them?
Not personally, no, I wouldn't. No.
Why not?
I mean, I would if I was a farmer or something like that, if I could.
Do you think WA will be able to keep them out?
Hopefully. I love WA.
Well, I thought I'd head out there and see how they were going for myself. Timber Creek is about 300 kilometres west of Katherine, and the toad-busting team are a little bit further west still, on a cattle property called Avern. Graham Sawyer is the Stop the Toad Foundation coordinator, and I met up with him by a blissfully cane-toad-free Avern Lagoon.
This lagoon has been well and truly busted. We've taken, I'm not sure the exact numbers, but a couple of thousand out, and we've got it down now to the point where toads are really hard to find around this lagoon at night.
Do you actually wade through it? I mean, might there be toads lurking in the middle?
No, toads aren't real keen on getting out too far in the water. They will jump in the water and swim away sometimes when you're toad busting, but they normally, within a few minutes, return to the bank.
We're sitting here, it's the middle of the day, all the volunteers are resting up for their night's busting work ahead. But why are we all here at all? Why Avern?
Well, basically, two things. One, this is about the toad frontline. In fact, it was supposed to be the toad frontline. And also, it's the sort of country where you can have your biggest impact on cane toads. So the plan is to try and push that frontline back from the west to the east as far as possible, back the other side of Timber Creek, hopefully. And that way, you're creating a buffer zone. And then the toads will probably flood back into that buffer zone in the course of the following wet season. But then in the following dry season, hopefully, you can repeat this process and wipe them out again.
So each and every year you'd have to come back and bust?
Pretty much. I think CSIRO are saying at the moment that they're 2 to 3 years from finishing their research on a solution to cane toads. And the hope is that you can hold the front line or slow it up that much that CSIRO will be able to step in and provide some extra resources before they hit Western Australia.
How do you know while we're sitting here on Avern Station near Timber Creek that they aren't sneaking past us slightly to the south into WA?
Yeah, look, it's a possibility for sure, and there are plans afoot to check those sort of places. All the reconnaissance work that's been done by the CALM team and by ourselves and by the Kimberley Toad Busters to date indicates that the toads in this area are much further advanced towards WA than they are further south. And that's a result of topography and so forth. They move more quickly through this floodplain country along the rivers than they do across the rock country and down through that southern part of the Gregory National Park. But it's certainly an area that's got to be looked at. But again, it's the sort of country that in the dry season, cane toads don't really have many options. And so you can hopefully do something significant about their numbers at that time of year.
We've had a rabbit-proof fence. Australia's also had a dingo fence. Can we create a cane toad fence?
Yeah, look, I've thought about it a lot. I don't know that we can. I think we can use fences as part of this process, but most of the cattle people around here will tell you they have enough trouble keeping three strands of barbed wire strung up, let alone something that would stop cane toads. And because of the stark differences between the wet season and the dry season, I think fencing is going to be difficult. We're going to trial a process of putting shade cloth on an existing fence and see whether that will provide us with enough advantage to make it worthwhile. But at this point in time, there's no way you could put up a significant enough fence to pull these cane toads up right across the landscape.
What kind of fence would it take to stop a toad?
They can't get over much. I mean, we've used a barrier of shade cloth that's 60 centimetres high. We haven't had any toads cross it yet. So, they've got no ability to jump much. And they can climb wire mesh and things like that, but they can't climb anything smooth. And with shade cloth, they don't seem to be able to get their fingers into it to climb it. We're looking at just putting shade cloth off the bottom of existing cattle fence, pegging it along the ground and burying it into the ground and setting traps along it so that it'll act as a deflector when the toads hit it and deflect along it trying to find a way through. They'll run into a cane toad trap.
How is it that you have faith that you can slow and stop them?
The whole conventional wisdom on cane toads has been you can't do anything about them, and I guess we're just too stubborn to accept that as a fact. But ecologically, this country is so different to a lot of other places in Australia where cane toads have been established for a long time. The first point, I guess, is I've never been able to find a documented case where anybody's ever tried to do this sort of thing before, and everyone's just sort of said, oh, it was, there's no way you can stop them. But what we've seen so far on this bust actually gives me great confidence that there are things you can definitely do. I guess the thing that started this process in my mind was a conversation with Ross Alford, who's the guy that's done more cane toad research than anybody else in the country. and he was telling me about how water sensitive cane toads are and how cane toads have no biological mechanism to store water or to protect themselves from water loss. He actually said if you put a wet rag and a cane toad out in the sun, they both lose water at about the same speed. And as a result of that, cane toads need to find water every couple of days. Now, the research they did indicated every 4 days. Well, it may even be worse than that out here. They may need water every second day or something like that. And for a cane toad, the only option they've got is they've got to come and sit around the edge of these water holes. And because these water holes drop, and like what we're sitting on now is bare ground, when you walk past here with a bright spotlight at night, cane toads are really, really easy to see. It's a combination of cane toad biology and the way this landscape works ecologically and weather-wise that makes me think we can possibly stop toads out here.
Is it population density that's making them migrate, or is something else at play?
Unfortunately, the scientists can't give us a straight answer on that one yet. There is some suggestions from people that on the front line you do get directional movement of cane toads. That's fairly inconclusive at this point in time. The research that's been done in other places, which I guess is mainly behind the front line, shows cane toad movement to be fairly random. So, yeah, I really can't give you a good answer on that one exactly, but it seems to us at the moment that there's a lot of movement west, and that seems to be fairly driven. Whether that's a case of population pressure pushing toads further across or what, we really don't know.
It's pretty important, isn't it? Because even if you do, say, clear out most of the toads from this area, if you leave just a handful, even though they've got all these beautiful lagoons and all this food free to themselves, then if something else is motivating them, they might just keep on hopping towards WA anyway.
Yeah, well, I think some of them possibly will. I mean, we've certainly planned that there'll still be movement. It's supposedly one of the most studied organisms around, the cane toad, but there's so much they don't know about it. Like, the original models of where cane toads were going to spread to in Queensland didn't include places like Stanthorpe because they were cold, frosty, and I think Stanthorpe has something like 30 days frost a year, and the cane toads have actually got in there, and they weren't going to get out to Longreach because it was too hot and dry. Well, they've got out to Longreach. There's actually a lot of concern at the moment that they've got into the headwaters of the Darling system right up in the Queensland-New South Wales border area out west, and that they may even track down the Darling right down to the Murray. But they're very different. Like, the guys that are working on the toad front at Port Macquarie tell me that their toad front moves about 1.5 kilometres a year, and for right through the winter, the cane toads aren't active. A complete contrast to up here. I mean, our cane toads move further than that in a night when it's perfect conditions. And I don't know for sure whether the impact up here is going to be worse because of that. Potentially it may well be, but certainly our goanna species and stuff, is the devastation is complete. I mean, this area here was one of the major hunting grounds for the local Aboriginal community from Buller. We had one of the traditional owners over here last week, and he was saying that every year at this time of year they used to come on goanna hunting trips over here. And they've been able to find one this year, and we've seen heaps of dead carcasses around this billabong, but we haven't seen a live goanna yet.
There has been some suggestions coming from Queensland and also around the Gulf that after that sort of initial front line and massive population explosion of cane toads, that the native wildlife does recover.
Yeah, we've heard that a lot, and we hope it's true, but unfortunately we haven't been able to find any evidence that it is. When we've been out to look in those sort of places, those reports have come from someone who's suddenly seen a goanna, and they haven't seen one for months or years, and suddenly they've seen one, so they think the goannas are okay, but in actual fact there's just the occasional one for whatever reason that seems to have missed toads. Whether it's they hit a toad and got crook rather than died, and have learnt not to touch them, or what it is, nobody really knows. There doesn't seem to be any evidence of genetics that they're immune to toad toxin, those animals. But we've done a fair bit of stuff to try and verify those stories, and we haven't been able to prove it.
Queensland's currently suffering drought and doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. Considering how dependent the toad is on water, could that signal the end of the cane toad, at least in the east?
Yeah, look, I don't think it'll signal the end, but what it would certainly do, if give people an opportunity to wipe out cane toads over vast areas of Queensland. We've seen the same sort of refuge effect out here. We get it in a dry season, but when you get protracted droughts, the remaining water holes are the only option cane toads have really got. And if you put people resources in there or cane toad traps and wipe out that toad population, then you could wipe them out over thousands of square kilometres probably. And a lot of that water is man-managed water, you know, turkey nests and troughs, and you could really have a huge impact on cane toads if you went about it the right way.
Is it too late, though, for somewhere like Queensland, if the native population, native animals, insects and Goannas, birds don't come back. Is it almost a case of why bother? They've been replaced by the very productive cane toad.
Yeah, look, I think it's always going to be worth it because there will be native animals in some areas still. Some of the goanna species have got a very extensive range across Australia and extend right down into the desert country where cane toads will never be able to penetrate. So there is a possibility that those sort of animals would be able to make a recovery. It's not a learned behaviour to avoid cane toads if you're a goanna because there's no parental interaction with the juveniles. When the eggs hatch and the young goannas come out of the eggs, they're on their own. So genetics and the whole issue of immunity to toxin, there's some people doing some research on that at the moment, actually, that there seems to be a gene in the animals that eat cane toads that may give them a degree of immunity to the toxin. One guy I was talking to at a recent conference in Brisbane was talking about genetically splicing that gene into some of our native animals.
So where are we going to head tonight?
There's a couple of lagoon systems to the north of here, which we've been working the last couple of nights.
Are you actually counting each and every toad you catch?
Yeah, every morning. What we do with the toads is when we get back to camp at night, they're all in big plastic bags.
Still alive.
We gas them with carbon dioxide and leave them overnight. They're all dead next morning. And we sort them out into males and females and juveniles, which is toads less than 80 millimetres. And we do that for the bags coming off each location. And then we dig a big hole and bury them all. Massive toad grave just up there to the south a bit on a big creek line.
Is that going to cause an environmental problem?
One of the things about toads we found is that the toad toxin breaks down very quickly. If there's anything to go by with the toad juice fertiliser that's been developed, come back here in a couple of years' time and the trees might all be twice the size up there.
Okay, well, night is starting to fall now. And for Bush Telegraph and Western Australia, I, Kate Sieper, am becoming a toad buster.
Base camp to Toad 1. Come in, please.
Yeah, copy that, mate.
This is your head torch to put on so you can see at night time. Then you've got your lamp, okay, it's got a battery inside, you have to put that around your waist. Then you have your jacket, fluoro in case you fall over. It's mainly so that if we can't hear you, we can see you because it reflects, okay?
Good thinking.
Yes, and also you have to make sure you take some water with you.
Right.
Plenty of fly screen because there's a lot of insects out there. And I think that's it.
Beautiful.
Yes. Okay,
do I get gloves?
Yes, I'll get you some plastic gloves. Okay.
My snake bite kit.
My what? My snake bite kit. What's the glad wrap really for?
The first aid for snake bite is for the person to be immobilised, get them prone, stable, and you bind. You don't cut the wound anymore. You don't wipe it. You just over the top of the clothes. You just bind the limb reasonably firmly, far up as you can. Mobilise it. And quietly get them towards help.
So everybody's carrying glad wrap.
There's a glad wrap out. There's also first aid kits, but glad wrap is a very effective way of doing that.
So. Everybody's setting out, headlamps strapped on, reflective vests on, and of course carrying plastic bags ready for the toads. As if toads weren't creepy enough without hunting them at night.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, we're driving up to a place called Leichhardt Tank, which is a big turkey nest up on the northeast corner of the station. It's the first time we've been there tonight. We've been up there during the daylight hours to check it out. We're interested to see what it looks like at night.
Where did the gassing idea come from?
A friend of mine who works in the aquarium business at the Cherokee Wildlife Park told me they use gas to kill animals at the park before they fed them to snakes and stuff. But they also, he found on the internet that the French used carbon dioxide to kill frogs in the food industry in France where they make frog's legs. So we decided to give it a try. And the first one we did, we used a SodaStream siphon bottle out of my SodaStream maker at home and took it outside, pumped the bag full of gas. I took the bottle back in and put it on the shelf. And when I came out, all the toads seemed to be just sitting in the bag like they had been. And I thought it hadn't worked. So I picked the bag up to have a look and they all fell over. They were already unconscious.
So how long does it take to kill them?
So it's like an anaesthetic overdose, and their heart stops anywhere between sort of 10 and 25 minutes after they've been put in the gas. Those big cylinders we use, well, the ones out here gassed about 8,000 toads out of the first bottle. Very easy. Something that you can do on a large scale in the field, which was also pretty important in terms of the planning for toad busts like this, because disposing of the toads is one of the biggest hassles.
I can't pick it up.
Okay.
Okay, just have a touch and a feel first.
It's all right, you're doing well.
He's hard on the back, but yep. he's so squishy in the middle.
He is a little squishy in the middle. Now, the idea is you've got to grab him firmly. There's no mucking around once you've got him. That's it.
I've got the hoppies, Kate.
Yay! Got it! Kate got her first toe.
It was a setup, but still, it's bagged again.
Okay, now where was your
And he's
other
kind
dude?
Of slimed me, but just...
Yep, you're going to have to be firm and fast
firm
with him.
Fast and decisive.
What a woman. Are you going to get these guys?
Creepy.
Quick. Hey. Oh. Lost him.
Got away.
Oh, look at this. What have we got? One, wow. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
And just pick him up and it's... There's another one.
Oh, two in the head.
Three. There were three.
Here's one.
One and
guys.
Oh, we've got a few of them here, chaps.
Yeah, I'll throw some more up to you. You listening?
Yeah, mate, hang on.
Two.
He's carefully handing them up the bank. Got the rain and toad. It's like the Old Testament.
He's doing exercises. Look, he's doing exercises.
Told people how many were out here, they wouldn't believe you, would they?
No.
That one
I don't believe it myself.
Come on, run.
It's like someone's in a corner manufacturing and
squirting them out.
Yeah, just punching them out in front of us.
Ooh. Ooh, big fatty. I got him.
I really like toads. I think they're wonderful little biological machines. They're just very admirable, but they are in the wrong place.
Yeah, I can see a big one. Now, look at the size of that one at the back. It's got a saddle on it. Look at this one around here. Look at that one through there. It's got a saddle on it.
Oh my goodness.
We can ride that one home.
I've seen dogs that are smaller.
Oh,
that is the biggest cane toad I've ever seen.
Woo! Woohoo! There you go, there's a present for you.
Whoa! So after a night of catching, it's time to kill.
They go to sleep almost immediately. If you look at them, they just lie on their back. Okay.
We can't make any promises that we're going to succeed, and the odds are certainly not in our favour, but I don't know, there's a certain stubborn spirit in people. I hope that I hope the Australians don't sort of cave in against the odds in the way that, I don't know, sometimes it's tempting to. I thought we were better than that. Yeah, no, I'm hopeful. Look, if you lose and you had a red hot go, at least you've got the pride of knowing that you gave it a go. You know, and I think it draws people together, as you can see. And look, you know, none of us know each other. We're all from different parts of Australia and different parts of the world and different social backgrounds and whatever. And here we are, all sitting out in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night, gassing toads and drinking red cordial. You know, it's not all bad.
And the last voice you heard there was apparently author Tim Winton finishing that report from Kate Sieper. The Great Toad Muster has finished up for this dry season. For one full month, the Stop the Toad Foundation and their volunteers were out there. And around Timber Creek, they caught a staggering 48,318 cane toads. I guess we'll have to wait till the end of the wet season to see if that's managed to slow the toads' westward advance. And I wonder if Kate will join them for next year's hunt. This is Bush Telegraph on Radio National. Stay with us for our country viewpoint.